Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 150 with Crystal Shilatani. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Crystal Shilatani, we explore a number of interesting topics like how to act with honor and integrity, leadership is being a part of the solution, seeing people as people, the power of volunteering, and what are you doing for rest? Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving students' soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Are you attending the Mastery Leadership Institute this summer in Salt Lake City? You know, educators are great. They're great at collecting data. But how do your teachers use that data in real time? Learn how to stop just collecting data and to start using it at the Mastery Leadership Institute. Learn more about this event, including the locations and dates, at masteryconnect.com/MLI. That's masteryconnect.com/MLI. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I am happy to have Crystal Shilatani on the show today. And Crystal's the founder of Leading Up Consulting, a consulting firm based in North Carolina focused on advancing student achievement by strengthening teachers and school leaders. Crystal is a 25-year veteran of North Carolina schools and universities, serving in multiple roles from teacher to principal to course instructor of elementary education at North Carolina State University. Prior to her career in education, Crystal also served in the United States Air Force. In her free time, Crystal loves to run and work out, especially with her big goofy dog, Cooper. By the way, I love that description. And Crystal and her husband love to travel when she's not spending time with their son, Matthew, a junior at East Carolina University. Crystal, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be with you.
And thanks for your service to the country as well. And maybe we could start there just for a second. I'm curious what you may have learned in the Air Force that translated to helping you serve students and then serve communities as a school leader.
Well, I think, you know, my time in the military was certainly incredibly valuable to launch just the rest of my, you know, life and leadership. And I think really what I learned the most in the Air Force was about integrity and honor, really staying the course and doing what's right. You know, a lot of things are gray in the world, but I think, you know, integrity is not a gray place. And I learned a lot from some really amazing leaders in my time in the Air Force. And I was in during Desert Storm, so it was an interesting time in our country and a door opening that I don't think any of us really could have predicted, you know, that where we would be 9-10 years later and continuing, you know, being at conflict in the Middle East. So it was certainly a good foundation that I got in leadership from that time.
And is there something that you learned or something about your own DNA that taught you to honor, you know, your own values and your morals? Because, you know, ideas like character and integrity, we can define those in different ways. And if our definitions are different, we might think we're acting with integrity when we're really being a horrible, rotten scoundrel. And so I'm just curious, you know, like, how do you just deal with that?
I think really, and it was probably before the term servant leadership was defined, but I think that's really what I saw from the solid leaders that I was surrounded by were people who were willing to put others first and really willing to nurture relationships and to work hard at motivating and bringing the best out of others. I think one of my favorite quotes, all-time quotes, is a Harvey Firestone quote that goes something like, you get the best out of others when you give the best of yourself. And I saw quite a bit of that in my time in the military, even from my base commander. I know when I was getting ready to leave, he called me to his office. To be called to your base commander's office as an airman, as an enlisted person is like, mm-hmm. you know, crazy scary. And I remember showing up at his office. I was, you know, just a few months out from the end of my enlistment. And it was just such an incredible thing for someone at that level to notice who you are on a base and for him to just have a conversation with me about my future. And he was really trying to get me to stay in and was offering to help me get a commission. He knew I had gotten my undergrad degree while I was active duty. And I had my heart set on teaching at that point. But I think that was a pivotal moment that somebody would take the time, you know, to really work on developing a future leader and to have that, I think, vision of wanting to build, you know, future leaders as he was on the other end of his career. I was just starting mine and he was coming to the point, I think, of completion of his time in not just in the service, but his time in general and working and looking forward toward retirement. So I think it was a lot of selfless things like that. I was an air traffic controller. I remember sitting Christmas Day in the control tower. There are no planes flying on Christmas Day in the military. They're all, everybody's off. Yeah. And hearing a knock at the tower door and going down, looking through the peephole. And it was our base commander's wife bringing Christmas dinner to the crew that was working. I mean, that was the type. You develop a family outside of your biological family. You're away from home. And it's amazing the camaraderie and what people will do for one another. And I think that really translated a lot into how I wanted to develop the family in my school. I think all of us who've been school leaders, you know, you'll talk about your school family versus your, you know, actual family. And I think that was, you know, really a nice foundation for me as well, is looking at how you take care of one another in that work family relationship, and particularly in a situation where you're so far from home and from your, you know, family on holidays, et cetera. But those were just such great examples. And with the advent of social media, it's been amazing to reconnect with so many of these folks and to really go back and to be able to thank them, to find them and to say, hey, I just want to thank you that when I was 19, 20 years old, you did this for me and it had a lasting impact. And I still remember that and appreciate, you know, you being there and having that camaraderie and that really as close as you can get to unconditional care for someone that's not part of your literal biological family. And I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And just pulling out some of those points for the listeners, you know, idea of family, that one is coming through strongly. I also really gravitated towards the idea of just, you know, doing the work, right? And not necessarily having to make a big show about it, but then people notice, you know, people notice. And when you're the leader, right, do you notice people that put in the work and celebrate them, call them into your office, and the idea of developing future leaders? And then finally, I love that quote you shared, which I just want to repeat. Correct me if I get it wrong, but what I heard was, you get the best out of others when you give the best of yourself.
Yeah, that's it.
So can you tell me a bit more about what inspired you to pursue a career in education? Because there you are in the office and you had a sense of what you wanted to do next. But what inspired you, to pursue that career?
Well, you know, I think I was stationed in California. It's a base that no longer exists. It was in the Merced area right outside Yosemite National Park. And so that was a world away from home, or half of world away from home. I'm from southeastern Ohio. So I really wanted to get involved in the community outside of just the military base. And so I, you know, started attending a community church and trying to become part of more of the Merced and Atwater community. And so I started volunteering at a local school because they had had a lot of budget cuts and they didn't have teaching assistants. And I just got hooked. I mean, I was probably halfway through an undergrad degree in aeronautics. And here I am volunteering in a school. In the military, you work kind of wonky shifts. So I would be during the school day volunteering and then go do my shift as a controller. And I just loved the atmosphere. I loved being with the students and watching the teachers. And I decided I want to teach. And my husband, at the time we were dating, and he really encouraged it. You know, he was like, you've got to follow this. I can tell you're passionate about it. And I went and talked to my advisor at the university and I said, what do I do now? You know, I've invested so much time in this degree. I'm active duty. This has been a lot of juggling and balancing to try to get these classes in, you know, while I'm working. And he really helped me to pave out a course in order to do that. And I'm forever grateful, you know, to him for doing that and working with me. And I literally got out of the Air Force on a a Friday and started student teaching the following Monday. I had a weekend to move out of base housing, to get an apartment locally. I had my school assignment, and it was, you know, talk about pulling the Band-Aid off. I had no break or time in between, you know, one world to the next, but I'm so glad I did it. And it was such a great opportunity to, you know, to stay in that community and to do my student teaching there and to start my career there before we, you know, pulled up stakes and moved to North Carolina. But that was really what hooked me, was getting out into the school community and volunteering and just seeing the need and really letting my passion drive those next steps in my life.
Yeah. And Crystal, was there a moment when you realized that you wanted to get into school leadership too, or was that always there?
You know, I don't know that it was always there. I think really once I got settled in Raleigh and I was teaching here, I kind of became this go-to person with some of the staff on my grade level or within my team. I was, you know, working in a K-2 setting. It was a K-5 school, but, you know, teachers kind of collaborate and congregate around specific developmental stages or levels with the kids. And these, I think I might've just been naive, or I don't know, you know, where they would say, you should go talk to the principal about this.
Yeah.
And I would go like, hey, can we do this or that? And I became kind of this go-between from this group of teachers to the principal, who I don't know why. I don't think they were intimidated by her, but I think a lot of them were just nervous about speaking up. And I really started enjoying it. And the principal did what I think good leaders do. Hey, you want to change this? Go come up with a new schedule. Go bring me the fix. And so I fell for that. I was young. I was like, oh, wait, I didn't see it as more work. I saw it as an exciting opportunity to, you know, to kind of help shift some change in the school. So I would sit down and work on the schedule or work on these things, you know, and take them back to the principal. And she would be like, oh, yeah, I think this will work. And I think that just kind of fed something in me that really got me motivated and interested in leadership. And that's really where it took off, was kind of being that go-between initially. And then that principal being, you know, smart enough to say, hey, listen, I can't fix all of this. And if you want to make it better, but I don't know that she thought I was going to put the time and effort into it, but I'm glad I did. I think it was good for us. We developed a strong relationship, and she really became, you know, a champion for me as I went on and went to graduate school.
Nice. This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. There's a Derek Sivers quote that I absolutely love that goes like this: what is ordinary to you is extraordinary to me. So my follow-up question, Crystal, is what do you consider your superpower?
Oh, gosh. You know, that's a tough one. You know, I really don't know what I would consider my superpower. I guess if I had to really boil everything down, when anybody asks me about life, leadership, you know, just things in general, it comes down to relationships. So I would say that I can, in general, be in the presence of just about anybody at any level and make a connection. So it could be, you know, the guy sweeping the parking garage in the morning when I go out to my car, to sitting in a room, you know, with the Pope. I just see people as people, and I really don't put anyone on a pedestal, and I don't negate anybody because of what they're doing currently or where their situation is. So I think that's probably comes from my background. I grew up in, like I mentioned earlier, in Southeastern Ohio, a very high poverty area. Neither of my parents had finished school themselves. They both left school around sixth grade to take care of family and to, you know, kind of do life. And so I just really think if I were to say I have a superpower, it's just honoring people where they are and really making those connections. It's that relationship piece, I think, that's just key to humanity.
Yeah, key to humanity, key to influence and leadership, and just being an awesome, incredible leader. I love that so much. There was a long time ago, this global leadership summit I attended, and there was a man speaking, and he shared this idea of crushing organizational hierarchy. And I think when you can just see people where they're at and not treat them differently just because of your title or, you know, whatever their title may be, and just interact, you know, on that human level, people are going to open up, be vulnerable, ask for help, and go the extra mile for you that much more because you have that just human to human connection without all the rest of the ways we, you know, just make it messy.
Yeah, absolutely. Boy, don't we make it messy.
Yes, we do. We do. Crystal, I'm obsessed right now with routines and rituals. I'm revamping my productivity course. By the time this airs, it's been out for, you know, probably 6 months. But right now I'm digging in a lot into things that people do to be more productive and successful. So answer this however you want. Some folks have a morning routine. So if you do, what does that first hour look like? And if you don't have a morning routine, no problem. Do you have any types of rituals or routines that you use throughout the day to help you optimize and produce high quality work?
Yeah, my morning routine is pretty set. I mean, my feet hit the floor and I immediately suit up, you know, throw on some running clothes, grab my dog, and we head out first thing in the morning. It's critical to him now that I've moved from the suburbs to downtown. So we have to get right out the door. There's no back door I can let him out into a fenced yard any longer. Yeah. So I can never be lazy regardless of the temperature or the weather. So yeah, I always head out first thing with Cooper in the morning. I love being out in the city and watching it wake up and watching the buses start and interacting with folks that are out early in the morning as well. And, you know, we get back and I normally have my morning coffee and then I work out. So I try to, within the first hour, just kind of knock those things out. And I have found that one of the best ways to be productive is to stay out of my email, stay out of social media, and just off of my phone in general, until I have my first hour of the day at least under my belt, which includes walking Cooper or running with him if that's my workout for the day. Or if it's not, I'll walk him and come back and, you know, work out from there. And then I start getting into that. It's just so easy to get derailed. If you open email and you see something, you feel like you need to respond right away. And I'm like, you know, everything can wait an hour. If it's not a family emergency, if it is, then I would have gotten a phone call or a text. But that's pretty much how I start my day each and every day now.
I love that you know, avoid email, avoid the phone as much as possible in the morning, because I know that hijacks our focus and attention and then bad stuff happens. We're not as productive as we want. Is there anything you do to avoid the phone, or is it just the habit of it?
It's just really developing that habit of not opening. I mean, I physically have it on me, especially when I'm out and about, you know, walking through downtown Raleigh in the mornings. And, you know, it's just, I don't open that email. That little email icon stays. And I actually, years ago, I would say at least, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, I learned how to turn off that little number on an iPhone where it shows you how many emails are in your inbox. And so, you know, that was so freeing. And that was just such a psychological win for me as a principal to not look down when I was out with my family and to see, you know, X number of messages that were cluttering up in there. And so I've just, even now that I'm not in a school setting, I've always kept that off so I don't see it. And I just refuse to open up LinkedIn or any other social media, Twitter, whatever it might be, because I know it's just this trap. I go down the rabbit hole. I know myself. So this is, you know, was my aha moment several years ago, because I found myself just looking up and going, where did the last hour go? How did this happen? And then you, all of a sudden you don't have time to work out. You don't have time to do these things because now you've got an appointment or something that you've got to attend to. And yeah, so it's definitely, I think, been a key for me just because I don't have the self-discipline if I get in there to not start engaging in the emails and opening things and just take off with work in the morning versus, you know, taking care of setting my course for the day, you know, and making sure. I think to me, if I miss a workout, boy, it just really derails my day. That's critical.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And, you know, these phones are expertly designed to keep us focused on and engaged in those apps. And so, yeah, have that same type of discipline that Crystal has. Some other things you can do before, you know, if you don't have that discipline developed, you can. I took all my apps off the first screen of my phone and moved them to a second screen. Months ago, I had them, all my apps, in one folder called Focus. And so I had to really intentionally look and search for apps to use to get unfocused from work and play around in social media land or email. You cannot have your email on your phone. Imagine that. But shocker, it is actually possible. Regularly rearranging the way your apps are actually just organized on your phone because then it becomes less of the rote, you know, just mechanical and not even thinking about using the phone. It makes it a little more difficult to engage in those type of apps. And I love your tip about turning those notifications off, turning the sounds off, heck, even airplane mode or do not disturb. Like those are all actually your best friends from, you know, taking this very powerful computer that we walk around with in our pocket and making it actually very simple or not, you know, very useful at all, but doing that so we can produce work that really, really matters. So hopefully the listeners, you know, got a few tips from that. Crystal, I would love to hear the story of starting Leading Up Consulting.
Well, you know, I, as you mentioned earlier, been in education for about 25 years. And I think toward the end of my career as a principal, you know, you have a network of folks that you keep in touch with, but life gets busy. You know, you also have your family, you have a lot of other competing priorities, and it's just such an isolating place, you know, when you're in that lead role in a school. And I really started thinking about that my last year about what can you do or what could I do? How do we connect principals? I mean, I think you've done a great job with what you're doing with your podcast and your masterminds. And I was just thinking similarly of it's such a lonely position. How could I help others? How could I connect as a, you know, kind of a non-stakeholder in the sense that I'm not from your district. I'm not here to judge. I have a deep level of empathy and understanding yes. for the situation you're in. And I understand, you know, the difficulty in balancing and just in any leadership role that you've got, but at a school, it's just so different. You've got parents, you have students, you have teachers, and you just have all these folks vying for you to make decisions in a certain direction. It's hard to keep that all together. And really, it leading up came out of that. I initially retired and just took time off. And I wasn't thinking about consulting, to be honest. And I started getting phone calls from colleagues and connections, of, you know, a little bit into it. Hey, you know, could you consider how our board could maybe do this or that? And I would just kind of do these things. You know, I'd meet for coffee with people. My husband would say to me, you're kind of busier now than I feel like you were when you were a principal, which really wasn't true. It's just he wasn't used to having me around the house so much. And now I was running out all the time to meet folks, to have coffee with people, to, you know, kind of just talk through situations. And it just really evolved from there into a legitimate business, you know, from folks calling in favors. And then it became referrals where a friend would say, hey, I've got this other board that would like some assistance with something similar to what you did for us. And so I really, you know, kind of launched from that platform and have just been very careful and intentional to keep that balance because I don't want to work the same full-time load I did as a principal. Mm-hmm. My husband and I do love to travel and he's got a lot of flexibility in his work world that, you know, I've been pretty intentional about keeping that balance, but also really keeping my hands in to what's happening in schools and in leadership. And it's just so energizing to be out in a school or to kind of get back in that grit of problem solving and trying to work through, you know, various issues or things that are happening at any given time. So I really do enjoy it.
Cool. I love that story. That was really, really nice. And I'm going to ask you a follow-up question about business, but I want to pick out a part for the listeners and the fact that, you know, you have a very clear sense of vision for what you want your day, your week, your month, your year to look like. And I participate in so many principal groups on Facebook. And I do that for two reasons. One, I want to build relationships, build my network. And then secondly, I just want to add as much value and help as many people as possible. And by spending about 30 minutes, you know, with Facebook groups or whatever a day, I feel like I'm doing that. And so for the listeners, the key there is like, what's the vision for your day, your week, your month? Do you have one? And once you have that clear vision established, what are you doing to set up those boundaries so that nothing infringes on that? Because something I read in so many groups is, you know, is there such a thing as balance? And do I have to be the first one there and the last one to leave? And somebody asked today, you know, my doctor told me to take Tuesday off. So we're recording on a Monday. Should I feel guilty. And I'm like, yes, self-care. Like, and then some hard questions. Who do you think you are that the building can't run for a day without you? Right. And then I asked an even harder question, your funeral. who do you want to be there and what do you want them to say about you? They're not going to give you, in this case, an atta girl, I'm so happy that you didn't miss any days at work, right? Like, is that the legacy you're trying to leave? Seriously?
Right.
And it's easier, I think, for us to say because we're those objective people and we coach and we consult and we motivate and inspire in that way. So my selfish question from a business standpoint, but this has a listener component to it. I'm curious how long it took to go from helping out friends, right? And they were calling in favors to getting referrals to the place where you shared in the pre-chat, you're comfortable now. You got the amount of business that you want to have, you know, you're in a very good place. And that's so awesome to hear. The connection for the listeners leading in the school, to me, that's like, how long does it take for a vision to actually materialize? You know, it's not just 6 months, a year or whatever. So I'm just kind of curious how long it took to get to that point.
You know, I would say it's been about 18 months now since I officially closed the door on my school leadership career, my building level leadership career. And I really did give myself some time to just rest. And that was hard. It's hard going from 100 miles per hour to slowing down. You've ever driven through, you know, you're on the highway and the speed limit's 70 or 75. And then all of a sudden you get to a construction zone and it's 55 and you feel like you're standing still, even though you're still really moving. That was a therapeutic process and it took time. So the first thing I really did was I wanted to volunteer. It was very important to me. I had read Give and Take by Adam Grant.
Yes.
And some things in that book, gosh, I love that book. And some things in that book that really resonated with me were the research behind volunteering and just 2 hours a week and what that does for us on a human level. And so I had been very intentional of choosing an organization I wanted to volunteer with and really getting established with my routine and my weekly routine and what that was going to look like and getting that on my calendar first. And really getting set up and rolling, going through the orientation and kind of developing that routine. And so, you know, that was because I knew I still struggle even after having, you know, a full career in leadership. I struggle with saying no. I, by nature, want to help people. I, you know, love the friends that I have, my family, connections. And so I have the hardest time saying no and not jumping in, especially when I feel like it's a potential like rescue situation. So it's really, really tough for me. And, you know, so initially, like I said, the first things that kind of happened along the way were just, you know, helping with small components here and there. But then I've had some larger organizations. I work with an organization, it's a national organization called Team CFA. And so I sit on a couple of school boards and work directly with them. And so, you know, I know that that's about 4 days a month of time. And so I put that on the calendar. And then I would say to myself, what is this balance that you want? And for me, honestly, I really didn't want to work more than about half time. I like to be able to travel. I'm going to Africa for a couple weeks coming up soon when it's summer there and really deep winter here, I'll be heading to Cape Town. And so, you know, those are the things I want to be able to get away for consecutive days, you know, things that you don't necessarily get to do when you are a principal that you kind of aspire to someday do. And you wonder, well, how did people do this? And so, you know, really for me, it was when opportunities came up, I would try to be selective and not initially pull the trigger on it. You know, when I would see something happening and know that this group or when I would see a call, you know, on LinkedIn, hey, we need help with this. I would say to myself, don't respond now, like wait for 48 hours, maybe wait for a week. Because a lot of times my instinct is to immediately respond and say, yes, I will help with this. And here are my credentials. I want to support you guys. And I think that was really probably one of my biggest challenges was learning to say no and learning to and to justify it in that it's not that I don't want to help you, but I want to give you my best. And I know I'm not going to be at my best if I allow myself to lose that balance that we talk about all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to lose it when you're a building level leader because, you know, you have to respond and do all these things to keep your school running. But when you're consulting, it's a little bit of a different, you know, concept, I guess, because you're coaching, you're consulting, and you can say, I am not able to do this, but generally what I'll do then is refer to somebody that I know that I'll say, this person has the skill set you really want, or, you know, has the time that you need for them to invest in your project right now. And so that's been a challenge because you you really want to, you know, leap in, or at least I do. And I think it's in our nature as educators and leaders to do that. So, but I would say it's taken about 18 months to where I'm at a good point. You know, I have multiple organizations that I work with. I'm on kind of retainer or on call, and some are ongoing projects, you know, and I know when they happen. And then I plan and organize, you know, one of my favorites, Blue Ribbon Schools. We do a student leadership institute at Disney World twice a year. So I've got that on my calendar. I know what it takes to build up to the institute and staff it and to have it ready to roll. And then, you know, I get to do the coolest thing in the world and fly to Orlando and teach kids about leadership through, you know, the lens of Disney, which is one of the coolest companies in the world. So those things, you know, I've committed to. I know the time frame, and they're there for me. And now, like I said, it's 18 months in. It's not that I don't entertain new contracts or new opportunities. I certainly do, but I appreciate the balance that I have, you know, in my work and life now, and to be able to travel and sleep, you know, through the night, which is a blessing, not waking up at 2 o'clock worried about something, right, you know, that could be happening with my staff or at the school.
Absolutely.
Hey, Danny Sunshine here, and I'd like to tell you a little more about the Mastery Leadership Institute taking place this summer in Salt Lake City. This event is an intensive 3-day professional development retreat facilitated by nationally recognized principals. Educators will be immersed in full-day workshops focused on strategies to effectively use data to target interventions, personalize learning, and evaluate instructional efficacy. True school transformation is only possible when educators are empowered to use the data they collect to immediately impact teaching and learning. Learn more about the Mastery Leadership Institute, including upcoming dates and locations, at masteryconnect.com/MLI. That's masteryconnect.com/MLI.
Any tips for our listeners regarding rest or what you're learning about how to say no?
You know, I would go back to one of the things you mentioned earlier about the rest piece. I think this was probably my last year as a building level leader that I set that do not disturb up on an automatic cycle. So every night around 7:30 or 8, my phone would go to do not disturb, and I had it set to click back on at 6 a.m. I think that was a big thing for me. Just, you have to give yourself time. And I did, I think, everything wrong. I'm giving this advice from the perspective of, don't do what I did. I mean, I would feed my family and kind of decompress with them in the evenings. And then when I got everybody settled for the night, I would grab my laptop and try to catch up on email. And I would have a goal of, I'm going to go to bed tonight with no more than 50 new emails in my inbox. Because honestly, there were days that I would get a couple hundred fresh emails. Mm. You know, as a K-8 leader, it was a charter school. So I was also the superintendent, not just the, you know, head of school. You have all these, you know, you get a lot of emails from the state level, from other folks. And I'm like, why did I do that? That's crazy. You know, I think that's kind of a key, is, you know, make yourself stop doing that. But I think surrounding yourself with really competent people, I would say probably my last, you know, a half of my career, I just really focused on developing other leaders and putting them in the spotlight. And my assistant principal for the last 5 years would say to you, I just did not like to be in front and on the stage when we were having information sessions and magnet fairs and things like that. You know, they always want to hear from the principal, but I was really wanting to put my instructional leaders up there. The people who were spending the most time in those instructional settings with the students, I just felt like they needed to be the ones taking the ownership and doing the tours of the school. And I was always there and willing to meet with parents. But I think, you know, you want to hire people that are better than you, that know more than you do, that mm-hmm. that can really surround yourself, because that makes your workload a lot lighter. When you have those competent people that you know you can trust, then you're in the seat of monitoring and of making sure that, you know, the final product or whatever it might be is completed, you know, in your timeline. But I think it also gives you that peace of saying, I don't have to be here tomorrow, and this place is going to run just as well as if I were here, because I've got these amazing people that are in place. And that's really what got me to the point of being able to say, I can leave now. Mm. I can retire. I can do this. This is going to be okay. And that's a process in and of itself, I think.
Yeah, that's great. You know, you're talking about a legacy and planning for, you know, the next leader to come in after you. You're just dropping so much value in this episode. I'm loving this conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And, you know, this idea that You want to surround yourself with competent people. And I've heard the phrase, right? If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And
right.
You clearly have a heart for developing others, whether it's working with the students down in Disney, consulting work you do now, or what you did as a building leader. By developing others and putting them in the spotlight, that just makes your job, I think, more satisfying. But everything works better when people are getting better. And there's a quote that I mentioned a million times on this podcast, and a lot of what I do is at the heart of this. Bill Hybels says everybody wins when a leader gets better. So again, like, what are you doing to build in and develop your own people? And my approach kind of with the podcast, and I've heard this, so the idea I stole, but if you can make your podcast guest the hero of the show, so that's why I try to not interject as much and just ask good questions, that's going to give them a great experience. And what I hear in your own leadership style is that you made your people the heroes of the show, of the school, day in and day out. And I'm sure they just adored you for that.
That's very kind. Thank you.
Absolutely. So going from kind, let me hit you with a hard one.
Oh, gosh.
What's been your worst leadership mistake, Crystal? What did you learn from it?
I would say my worst leadership mistake was being too quick to make a decision, like too hasty in some decision-making processes early on, and not pulling more people to the table in that process. I think that, you know, is one of the things I learned over time, was really to kind of become better at investigating things and at looking at various options. A lot of times we listen to the squeaky wheel and we make decisions to quiet the squeaky wheel, when what we really should be doing is walking through our buildings and, you know, looking at our most amazing teachers and doing more of what would make those people, I think, I don't want to use the word happy, but, you know, what brings those folks to the table and what keeps them there versus those handful of folks that complain. And then if you make a decision to change something in your school or in the structure, you make a decision too quickly, you know, just kind of wanting that mosquito buzzing in your ear to be gone, I think that's where you start losing some of your best teachers. It's kind of like the Todd Whitaker, the monkey, you know, on your back piece. You know, I just think it took me time to learn, you know, because they're teachers who just quietly every day come in and they're amazing. And I think it's getting into those rooms and having conversations with them and really bringing them to the table in the decision-making process versus making a hasty or quick decision and changing something that it could ultimately cost you some of your most valuable team members. And that's definitely, you know, that's tough early on as a young leader to look up from the table and be like, wow, I just really did something, you know, incredibly, I guess, premature in a decision. And then how do you go back? It's hard to sometimes backpedal on those things. So yeah, that's definitely being too quick to respond or react to the complainers.
Yeah, definitely. Is there an idea or word or practice that we should just retire in education?
Oh gosh, you know, I don't know if there's something that we should retire or anything that I can think of off the top of my head to answer that one. I just, you know, we get so caught up in the next best thing. And I just worry that we kind of forget our roots and solidifying what we know works before we jump on the bandwagon. Maybe that's a word, we should retire. Maybe not retire. Maybe we should say it more often, you know, cut it out. Yeah, I can't really think of anything. Nothing is resonating with me off the top of my head. I apologize for that one. No kind of sharp comeback there.
There's no problem there. How about concerning school leadership? Have you changed your mind about anything in the past few years?
I think I had overvalued at times as a leader, you know, some of the things that come along quickly with technology, to a point where we were taking too many things out of the hands of amazing teachers and trying to put kids in front of computers to fix something where we should have been really spending more time developing our teachers. It's not that I don't think technology is valuable. I think it's incredibly important and valuable for, you know, our students, but I also think it changes at the speed of light. And so what a kid's doing right now in fifth or sixth grade is going to completely be totally different than what they're doing in their career, you know, from the equipment we use in schools to the programming. And so I think we, you know, have been a little bit too fast to adopt particular programs or technology-based curriculum supplements. And we've lost sight of really nurturing the professional development and maybe differentiating that for teachers. And so I think that's really something that we should have a little bit more time, you know, that we spend on thinking about that versus the quick fix. It just devalues teachers at a professional level, in my opinion, when we think we can, and I don't want to say a name of any particular program,
sure,
I don't
sure,
want to
sure.
discount anything, but when we think we can put a headset on a kid and throw them in front of something and the phonics skill set they're going to get from that's going to be, you know, better than what can be implemented within their classroom. Not that those things don't have a place, you know, for remediation or extension, but I think good teachers are undervalued and we don't spend the time to properly develop. And that shows in the teacher turnover we have. And if the statistics are still out there, you know, saying what, 5 years, you know, as a burnout rate, then, you know, that's concerning. I think we really need to level up our game in elevating the profession of educators and valuing teachers.
A lot of times I ask, you know, what you do for fun, but in the bio, you talk about running with Cooper, your big goofy dog, and traveling and that kind of stuff. So I'm going to ask you a different question that I haven't ever asked a guest. And that would be, what's unique to Crystal that brings you joy? You know, that might just be really very specific to you.
Oh, gosh. I would say, you know, really what brings me joy is just staying connected with my tribe, my network of friends, my siblings. So just those kind of quiet moments in time that we can take. I have an annual trip I do with a group of girls, women now, but we all have known each other since we were in elementary school,
wow,
which is
awesome.
Kind of unheard of. And yeah, we do an annual trip, at least one annual trip. There, several of them are still in Ohio. And so I'm a short drive from them, just a few, you know, 7-8 hours. But yeah, that really brings me joy, that time that we get away. They're five of us and we unplug, we're away from, you know, family, spouses and everybody. And it's just us. And it's like, we never, you know, missed a beat or skipped, you know, any time. And of course we text each other as a group and we stay kind of in touch with each other's day-to-day lives. But boy, that time together, exploring, you know, doing things. Our last big trip was San Francisco and we just had a blast. So I think that really brings me joy. It just always gets me refreshed and rejuvenated and it reminds you, you know, who your core group of supporters are. I think that's a big one for me.
And it sounds like the destination for your friends to travel to changes from year to year.
Yeah.
How do you choose? Does everybody get, you know, a stab at picking the location and it rotates, or how do you choose on the location?
For the most part, it's been centered around kind of home for each of us.
Okay.
I mean, if it's not home, it's a place of the heart. You know, like I have a friend who is a big Cubs fan. Boy, did that finally pay off for her this past year, you know.
Finally, yeah. They've been waiting forever.
But she goes to Chicago quite a bit. She got married in Chicago. And so, of course, we had to do a Chicago trip, even though she currently lives in southwestern Ohio. And so it's kind of that. It's a place that our heart has connected and we want to share it, you know, with our group, share our love and with the rest of our close-knit group. And so that's kind of how that happened over time. Of course, you know, Raleigh's
awesome.
Been a destination because it's my home, and San Francisco, one of our friends currently lives there. And, you know, we have these other cities that we've got on our kind of bucket list, you know, places we want to go as a group that we think would be a blast. Austin's up there really high on the list. So if anyone's listening from Austin, we're coming your way soon, I hope.
The Sox fan in me has to say, you know, the Cubs, I'm very happy that they won. It was good for their organization. It was good for the city. With that being said, you're going to probably have to wait another 100 years till you win a World Series ring again. And if you check who's had, you know, more World Series and who, you know, when it was the Sox and the Cubs facing off, who won that one, just check your history, get your facts straight, and good luck. But I say that all, you know, in joking and having fun.
Yeah.
Crystal, so we talked about Give and Take, the book.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other book that you would recommend all the listeners should read right now, and why?
You know, I think we really missed the boat as school leaders on some pretty amazing things that are happening in organizations outside of education. So yeah, I would definitely recommend a book by Jeff Sutherland called Scrum. And the subtitle of that book is The Art of Doing Twice the Work in Half the Time. And so I love that book. It was an accidental read. It came up in Audible because I listen to a lot of things as I'm driving on Audible. And so I guess it must have some sort of calibration or back end,
yes.
program. So Audible says to me, you might like this book based on all these leadership books. I'm like, what in the world is Scrum? You know? And I said that out loud. My husband was in the car with me and he's like, oh my gosh, I talk about stand-up meetings and Scrum all the time. And he's in the tech world. And I thought, well, how could this help schools? And so I listened to the book and I implemented that at my last school with my leadership team. And then we slowly began rolling this project management, I guess, is a way to kind of describe it. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Scrum or not. It's actually a rugby term of getting the ball down the field. But in these organizations, you'll hear and you'll even see sometimes job postings for Scrum Masters or for people to lead Scrum teams. So it's a pretty great organizational tool. As I read Jeff Sutherland's book about moving from waterfall planning and Gantt charts and things like that. And I was familiar with Gantt and kind of backwards designing a school year and all of our projects for the year. This Scrum component is just so cool because everybody has ownership of a specific thing and therefore has accountability. And as the Scrum master or the lead person, your job is to keep roadblocks out of their way. And I just felt like as a school, we got so much more accomplished. We did it so much more efficiently through implementing some of the principles within Scrum. And you can really do this. There's a whole group of educators now that are really working to implement Scrum in schools. Hospitals are using it. So it's not just for the IT world anymore. It's really being used across broad segments of private organizations, as well as city managers, I think, are using it now. Hospitals, like I mentioned earlier, and schools are starting to pick up. It's really in its infancy. But I would say to any school leader, pick that book up, do yourself a favor, read through it or listen to it on a flight. It's a short read, but keep it because you're going to want to go back and really take a look at how you could implement this. And the cool thing is you really make it your own. You develop and design your workflow, how you want it to look in your school or your setting, and make it work for your team. But boy, I really, really could say we just were so much more effective and efficient by implementing Scrum as our operating system. It was mind-blowing to me. So I definitely champion that as a not atypical leadership book for school leaders to read.
Awesome. And I'm going to do two shameless plugs, ask you the last question, and we'll wrap up this episode.
Sure.
Shameless plug number one. I love that you read widely outside of our industry, right, to improve as a school leader. That is the foundation or a foundational aspect of the mastermind. Read widely books about leadership, productivity, et cetera, from outside the education industry so that we can adapt that, bring this best thinking to our schools and communities to serve them at an even higher level. Shameless plug number two, like Crystal and like you, the listener, obviously you love audio because you consistently subscribe and listen to this podcast, making it the number one downloaded podcast for school leaders. In the show notes, there'll be the 22 best books for school leaders blog post I wrote. You could read through, grab any book that you want, but there's a content upgrade, a downloadable that's the top 10 audiobooks for school leaders, plus a free month of Audible if you want to check that out. So that will be linked up for you in the show notes. Crystal, you've made it to the end of the show. Well done. And you probably know that this question is coming. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by the budget or any other resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school and what would be your top three priorities?
Wow, I would really prioritize students having a voice. So I want the school to have multiple folks at the table in the design. And so I would definitely pull students, teachers, and folks in the community into that. That would be a priority. Space, it would have to have a lot of open space, a lot of physical space. It could be up. I've been in some amazing schools in New York City that have playgrounds on the roof. Mm-hmm. You can do that. I just really would love to get away from standard traditional classrooms. I would want every teacher and class to have kind of their home base, their comfort zone. But I would love for teachers to be able to go to a gym and use the gym and not in their mind go, I can't use the gym because PE classes are going on in there all day. I just think it would be great to have a lot of multiple use spaces where lots of light and it's bright.
Yes.
And some outdoor space, or even indoor space for, those of us who do live in places that have winter, that would be able to have students still engaging in some really great earth sciences and things of that nature. And I would want to have self-sustaining food sources. You know, I think it would be so cool for the food that provided to the students, for a lot of that to come right from our own campus. I just would absolutely love that. So that's kind of my space consideration component. And then I think thirdly, I would want it to be a community center. We all say that about our schools and we try to bring the community in, but it's amazing. You know, we have schools cloistered all over the place within communities and folks that have children come there regularly, but not necessarily other community members. So I would love to have some sort of mixed use joint, you know, capacity school that would include some great community resources that weren't just for the students that were attending the school, but were for everybody in the community. I think that's critical to really helping folks understand the key issues in today's schools and really helping students reach out outside of the brick and mortar part of their building and make an have an impact in the community. I think kids have some of the best ideas, you know, and why aren't we letting them have a seat at the table of the greater community as well? So those are some of my, I think, three key pieces of what I would want to have, you know, as part of that design process.
It's fantastic.
Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com.
Or like they say here in Belgium, voila. So Crystal, thanks so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Any parting words of advice? And what's the best way to get a hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of me is just to go to leadingupconsulting.com. You can contact me through my website. I have a phone number listed there as well as an email. I would say, you know, my parting words of advice would be, you know, take your time, enjoy life, slow down. It's a great honor to lead a school. And I'm excited that you have so many listeners gaining valuable insight from your podcast. And I would just say to all of them, you know, take an advice from somebody who didn't do very well at this, but just be kind to yourself, slow down, and, you know, maintain that balance.
Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you, 90% how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Crystal. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Crystal in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. And Crystal, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thanks so much for having me. I truly appreciate it and very much enjoyed it.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.